I'm Susanna Bransgrove, and this is Relativity, a new podcast sharing the lives of women in family businesses. Each of our guests' stories reflect the challenges and joys of navigating relationships with family members and participation in the family business. Join us as we dive below the surface into the real lives of women in family businesses. Welcome again to Relativity, the podcast for women and family business. My name is Susanna Bransgrove. I am your host, of course. And today we've got with us the lovely Amanda Kassar, who owns two businesses, Wealth Planning Partners and Trusted Aged Care Services at the Gold Coast. She's also currently the chair of the Million Dollar Roundtable. She really does keep herself busy. And not just that, she has written a fabulous book called Financial Secrets Revealed. And, of course, runs one of the businesses as a family business with her two adult children and also her sister-in-law working alongside her. Before that, though, when she first started, she was also in business with her parents. I can't wait to hear some of her insights and learning all about working with your children and working with your parents and how that sometimes does pan out. So welcome to the show, Amanda. It's lovely to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, quite an amazing story. And you've got your two adult children and your sister-in-law working with you. Well, congratulations for that. How did your family business get started?
I ended up working for a friend of my father's out of high school. He back then was what you'd call a lifey or a life insurance agent who specialised in insurance and superannuation. And I became his secretary pretty much straight out of high school. And not long into that my father joined the business. He was what we'd call a fiery or a fire and general insurance broker. So he'd look after business insurance, house contents and cars, while Trevor would look after the life and superannuation. So it sort of started back a generation before the children came along. That was before I even had children. And around that time I got married and was heading off on my honeymoon. So I trained my mum up to do a bit of admin and answering the phones while I was gone. So mum and dad were in the business with my former employer, Trevor. And that was probably around 94 when I got married, and then the children came along, 96 and 98. I did have a couple of years off to raise the babies and, you know, change the readers at school and do all the mum stuff, help out on tuck shop, which I figured I wasn't actually very good at, so I went back to work. And I did say to the children as they were growing up, you know, look, I've got this business. Trevor, in the meantime, has retired in his 70s. Dad retired and moved on, and I took over wholly and solely the financial planning side, and said to them, you know, if you want to ever work in the business, there's an opportunity for you to do that, which they both promptly went, there is no way we're ever working with you, Mum. So my son went off to become a mechanic after school, went to trade college, and my daughter went to college and became a makeup specialist. So at that stage it was just me and some others plodding away, but eventually my son turned up one day and said, oh, I've been thinking about doing my diploma of financial planning. And I said, oh, well, you're halfway through a mechanic apprenticeship. Why would you want to do that? Oh, well, you know, it's not working out the way I thought. I'm going to be dirty and earn $50,000 for the rest of my life, so maybe I should think about something else. So I said, well, I'd really love it if you could finish your apprenticeship, but I don't have any issue with you. Start study. So we signed him up to start his diploma of financial planning, and the next morning I received a phone call. What are you doing, Mum? I said, well, it's 7:30. I'm putting my face on like I do most mornings. Because I've been given my tools, I've been sent home, and I'm like, you knew that was coming. So he was softening the blow. Yeah, he did set it up. And set me up. Yeah, absolutely. So then he started part-time with me while he was doing his studies to, you know, base roles like everybody, sweeping the floors, cleaning the place, washing up and starting on the phones. And then, yeah, my daughter eventually decided she'd come in and do a bit of admin as well when my son decided he wanted to actually move into the planning space. So, yeah, and the rest, as they say, is history.
So the real answer to the question, how did the family business get started, is you were set up.
That's probably the most succinct way of putting it, yes.
So then what is the one thing that you love most about being a family business, and why is that the case?
I'm actually still trying to figure that out. No, look, one of the beautiful things is being able to have flexibility and work with your family to achieve goals. You know these people, for the most part, have your back. Everything's in their best interest as well as yours. So you're working towards very common goals. So I really love, you know, that we're all working to help each other out. And the role that we do as advisors, you know, despite what the media portrays, we want to help people. That's why we usually get into it. Most of us don't leave high school going, look, I want to be a financial planner and make lots of money and drive fancy cars. It's, I want to learn about finances to be able to help other people with theirs. So that's a really beautiful thing. And the fact that we're all working towards that together is really nice.
Wonderful. I'm just going to take you on a bit of a side road on that one. I just, while you're talking about supporting people, if you wouldn't mind just giving me a bit of background on the course that you've written around financial abuse and why that's so important to you. I think it's a wonderful story to share.
Yeah, when I was putting my book together, I just didn't want to write another wanky book on how to do a budget and keep your finances in line. There's plenty of that out there and you don't need another one from me. But I wanted to delve a lot more into do the way our parents bring us up and the things they teach us set us on a certain path with our finances. And I thought, how about I interview people from all walks of life and see where that takes me? And I wanted to know what was the best lessons they ever got in life, what were the top tips they'd like to leave on to their children, had they ever overcome adversity, what was the worst situation they'd been in, how did they get out of that? What were the lessons their parents taught? And the overwhelming response to that question was my parents taught me nothing. You know, there's no formal lessons, but there were a lot of, I suppose, unspoken or lessons learnt through behaviours. You know, mum and dad might say things like, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, or we've got to cut back, or we need to tighten our belt, or there isn't money for that this week. So they're the sort of lessons we'd hear perhaps around a scarcity sort of mindset, that things were tough. So I grew up to baby boomer parents who, you know, had parents in the war. You know, they'd come through the Depression, and it was very much that mindset of, you know, you make do, you fix things, things have to last longer, you know, keep on recycling, composting, all those sort of lessons. But one of the ladies I interviewed spoke to me about her ex-husband who was financially abusive to her. And the lessons she'd learnt from her parents were very much, you know, they'd go past a beautiful home and her parents would say things like, oh, they must be pretty awful people in there, really bad. You've got to do bad things to get ahead in this world. You know, they must sell drugs. Or so it was always very negative connotations around money that she'd heard growing up, which she still has to, you know, override manually in her head to this day. But her husband quite took advantage of her. She was a savvy, award-winning investigative journalist who'd come into this marriage with property and money in the bank. And over time, you know, in her best interests, he decided that it would be better to put all that into his name. He would give her ultimatums about what she could do for work. You know, I don't want you dabbling in the media anymore. You need to go and get a job at Woolies stacking shelves. And it wasn't until her little girl burst out crying one day and said, Mummy, that's not who you are. That's not what you do. And she finally felt a bit broken and thought, what sort of an example am I leaving for my daughter, who was about six at the time? So I just, that sort of blew my mind. I've, you know, been in a very respectful marriage for 26 years now. How did that happen? and, you know, came from a place where, you know, there was nothing untoward on a financial. It was a very 1950s housewife. Mum, you know, mostly stayed home with the children, worked a bit part-time when we were at school. Dad was mostly the breadwinner, a very traditional Australian upbringing for the 70s, I'd say. But I'd never heard anything like her story where, you know, this guy had taken her for everything. And then I think, you know, once you've turned on that reticular activating system, you start hearing about it all the time. And I remember that big case in Queensland and probably all of Australia, the Alison Baden Clay murder. And it also came out about how she was so financially abused and physically by her partner and emotionally. It often comes with, you know, the trifecta there. So that just sort of sent me down a path going, how often does this happen? And how do these smart women end up with these blokes? And look, I'm generalizing there. It can work the other way as well, but the majority is, you know, that this is perpetrated on women. So it just took me down this path going, how can we help financial advisors identify this amongst their clients? What are the red flags? What do they need to know? And how can they help? So that was sort of the path that I went on, long and meandering story, to get to, you know, from writing the book to doing course writing, which I'd never done before. I had no idea how to take that to market, and luckily had a girlfriend in the UK who said, you know, I think we've got something here. This is what I do for a living. You know, I do course writing and get them accredited, and I think, you know, advisors worldwide need to hear this story. And so interviewed a few people. One lady, her husband tried to murder her for her assets. Others are financial advisors who've seen elder abuse amongst their clients, you know, those in their 50s and 60s perpetrating it on their elderly parents. So it's much more common than we'd unfortunately like to think. And I think the stories need to be told so that we can start recognising it. You know, we often get that little niggle in the tummy when it's like, ah, that's not right. And we push it aside and go, oh, well, it was only $20. It was only this. It was only that. And we don't go, where's this leading? So, yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and congratulations on publishing that coursework and having this distributed and making a difference. That's really wonderful to
thank
hear.
You.
But I'm going to take you back now to your own family. And we heard about what you love about being a family business or being in a family business. So what about the more challenging aspects of that, being in business with your kids but also with your sister-in-law?
Well, she's actually a breeze, the sister-in-law. It's the children that are, I suppose, more of an issue. They have trouble distinguishing between I'm mum at home and mum in the office, where I'm like, actually, I'm not your mum here. I'm your employer. So being able to separate those, I think, is a bit of a gift. And it's one of those things that takes time. You know, there'll be clients there and I'll call out, mum, can you do this for me? Or mum. So I think establishing boundaries has been one of the really difficult things. I mean, I still don't mind being called mum. I actually had a very strict line when I worked with my parents. In the office, they were John and Christine, and when we're at home, they were mum and dad. So that was very easy for me. It's obviously not as easy for my children. So.
And from what you've told me, and I'm just sort of just alluding to, you know, some of the funny stories around this. So you've had to learn the hard way how to put boundaries in with your family, I believe. Would you be interested to share this story, or are you going to be too embarrassed about this?
I don't know if it's one that anyone wants to hear. But mum, I think it's how she shows her love. She would like to groom me in the office. So, you know, she'd like to come, and some mothers do like to pick on your blackheads or your squeeze your zits, nice, which is just revolting. I'm so sorry to even say that in a podcast. But it was just, you know, I'd be sitting there writing at my desk and having her pick away at my pungas, which, you know, looking back now, I was probably in my late 20s thinking, this really isn't right, but I don't know how to tell my mum to rack off when I'm in the office. So it's been a lesson about, you know, what behaviour is appropriate, you know, in an office versus a family environment. And look, there's plenty of families where that still wouldn't be appropriate. So setting those boundaries, I think, is probably one of the biggest lessons, really important to get right.
I think this is one of those beautiful stories where I'm sure, as inappropriate as you think, as it might sound, there'll be plenty of people listening going, yep, but it's sort of similar to what would happen in
my
family.
How do I stop my mum from doing this?
But obviously family relationships and dynamics are always or tend to be complex in the family business, and you've got two children, no doubt they're going to be, it's not just boundaries between how they treat you as mum or boss, but so how do you manage the family dynamics in particular between the two siblings? Are there many issues at times, or it's pretty much smooth sailing?
Oh, look, that would be a dream, smooth sailing. Actually, they, I think, took instant dislike to each other on sight at birth. I brought her home, and I don't think he ever got over the fact at 22 months old that he was no longer number one son and only son. So they've actually never been terribly close as siblings. Very, very different personality types. And my son is very much me, very A-type, organised, routine, gets things done. And my daughter is beautifully creative and daydreamy and kind and very sweet. And yeah, there's very definitely a clash there. So in the early days, that was terribly difficult to manage. That, come on, guys, corners, seriously, you're not toddlers anymore, just fighting over your toys. Would you be professional? So that was a massive thing. And look, how I dealt with that, I eventually had to bring in an external professional who could help me help them set the boundaries, because, you know, I'm always going to be just mum. And the more I say, stop it, stop it, stop it, you know, I'd say, you know, I'm not your mother here. And it just still felt like that all the time. So until someone else could come in and help us like mediate and collaborate on what we wanted, it was very difficult to get through that.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing that, because I think sometimes when families do hit these hurdles and challenges, what you're saying is don't be afraid to look for help and to find a pathway forward, rather than trying to keep using the same kind of sentences and the same kind of tools to just create the same kind of conversation.
Well, it was going insane, saying the same stuff and getting the same results and wondering why. So, yes, having someone else was really vital to moving along from that and setting the scene.
So is there something particular lesson that you've learned about yourself in this completely different role of not just being mum, of course, which is something that usually wouldn't happen in the workplace, being a businesswoman, so being in your own business, and all of a sudden being in a situation where those two worlds collide, it's like independent George.
Yeah.
So is there something in particular you learned about yourself and family dynamics that really helped?
I think for myself, I've had to commit to lifelong learning, I do love that, but it's been being constantly willing to invest in not only my own learning, but improving my mental health, my physical health, and, you know, understanding that people do see things differently. That doesn't mean they're right or wrong, but how do we all come to, you know, some cohesive outcome? So being committed to constantly being able to grow as a person, which, you know, I grew up in a house where it was all psychobabble, mumble, jumbo, you don't listen to all that nonsense. So it was very hard for me to overcome and then reach out for help and then grow as a human instead of just, you know, this is how I am, take me or leave it. So there was lots of lovely lessons, and I've basically committed to lifelong coaching. It's just, you know, the more you learn, I think the more you realise you didn't know. So it's very, very important, very practical, and, you know, just helps you become a better human every day. And, look, it's very difficult in a family because I'm not as patient with them as I would be with other people. You know, you have different expectations and you're more inclined to use mum voice going, knock it off, you too. So whereas, you know, I suppose you wouldn't have that dynamic with other people, but, it, you know, the people management takes on a whole different style when you're dealing with adult children as well.
So from an achievement perspective, I mean, we talked about the course that you've launched. That's one great achievement to make a big difference for many people in the world who are the victims of financial abuse. What other kind of achievements do you feel that you've had with your family business that possibly might also due to being a family in business?
Well, Mitchell has eventually decided he wanted to completely commit to his studies as well. And last year, a very proud mummy moment when he finished not only his graduate certificate in financial planning but also his graduate diploma, and then finished off the year with a distinction in self-managed super funds. So that was very exciting that he'd, you know, also committed to this learning and, you know, as a succession plan for the business. That's a really beautiful tool as well that, you know, I've got this, you know, great young guy who's still only 24, able to, you know, help out in pretty much every aspect of the business. So that's been really exciting, great achievement for the business as well to have, you know, two very highly qualified advisors in the practice.
And, of course, the whole succession planning journey still being ahead of you. There's no doubt still a lot of learning to be done.
Indeed. Hence the commitment.
So we might catch up in 20 years and see how you've been going with this and just do the continuation of this podcast. I can't wait to hear how the story unfolded. As we're sort of coming to an end, I wouldn't mind just asking you for one piece of advice that you would give to those thinking about getting into a family business or those who are working in a family business, and maybe particularly for other mothers in family business.
Well, I think, like I've touched on already, the setting the expectations. I mean, sometimes you can go into it thinking it's all going to be rainbows and unicorns, and you find pretty quickly there's lots of storm clouds and, you know, thunder going on. So making sure those expectations are set that, you know how much you're prepared to commit, whether it's to funding education or what, you know, the amenities will be in the office right through to the expected behaviours. I think that's very important. And sometimes you have to set it along the way. You know, there'll be a curveball thrown in the business that you just go, wow, I didn't think we'd ever have to deal with this one. I don't know what to do here. And then being okay with asking for help There's plenty of other people who've been probably in that situation or worse who can say, well, this is how we did it. Pick a few brains, you know, be prepared to pay for a coaching if you need it. But, you know, then you have to take it on board and work out what's right in your family situation because, you know, there is no cookie cutter approach with family business. The dynamics are so different in every family and what works beautifully in one just won't in another. So I think you have to have that mindset of being agile that, you know, you always have to duck and weave from one situation to the next and be prepared to be flexible with how you handle them.
Thank you. That was really fantastic, Amanda. Those last words of advice were just wonderful and no doubt a lot can be taken out of that for those listening. Wonderful to have you on the show and I look forward to catching up with you next time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great being part of it.
If you enjoy this podcast, please consider sharing it with your friends, subscribing to the show or leaving a review. This helps other women and family businesses find us and connect with our community. Thanks for listening. I'm Susanna Bransgrove and this is Relativity, a new podcast sharing the lives of women and family businesses. This podcast is brought to you by Women and Family Business, Bris Podcast Hub and PodWizard.